This is a special collaborative episode of the Runwave Podcast with Jay of Fit Health Well Podcast. We'll be discussing running while Black and the Ahmaud Arbery tragedy. Let's get started. Welcome back to another episode of the Runwave and
Fit Health Well
Podcast. Today we are doing a collaborative effort to talk about running while Black.
And, you know, we came up with this concept because of the wake of and a tragic killing of Ahmaud Arbery. And again, this is Jay Denson from Fit Health Well. And we just wanted to do something as Black runners and create a forum and a space to speak on the experiences that Black runners are now facing as a result of this.
Yes, and I was so happy when you contacted me and, you know, asked if we should do something, because I was just, I mean, when the Ahmaud Arbery situation went down, you know, it really hit home because we are runners and we casually go out for jogs. That's part of our daily routine. So this tragedy, which is what it is, it really hit home for me. And I was so happy when I got that DM for you to get together and work together and do this show.
Thank you for that. And yeah, definitely. Like, well, you know, I've been following you for some time as well. And, you know, I felt that if there was ever a time for us to work together, this was actually the perfect topic for us to combine both of our platforms, right? And being Black runners, you know, advocates of just health and wellness or overall, what I wanted to do and what the goal of this specific episode was is to come up collectively, just have some collective minds come together and come up with some ideas, right? Because we have Black runner groups, we have Black runners, and as a Black man myself, you know, I tend to operate in the world in defense mode. And what I mean by that is, you know, we get the stigma, and women too, Black women too, of the angry Black man or the angry Black female. And, you know, at times, even when we're running and things like that, you know, one thing that's always in the back of my mind is like, oh, should I wear a hoodie? I live in Canada now. I moved from New York to Canada. And, you know, throughout the year, you know, it's a little bit more cooler than it is, you know, than it was back home. So, you know, again, like these are things that, you know, I'm really sorry to say this, but like my white counterparts don't have to think about, like, okay, you know, if I put my hoodie on because I'm cold, how will I be perceived going into the world? And, you know, without myself just getting into the causes and the effects of why he died, you know, what I saw was a young Black male alone. And that was jarring to me. You know, he was running, he was alone. And there are times that I'm running and I'm alone and no one knows my story. And no one in any neighborhood that's not familiar with me know who I am as a person. And I need to be quite honest, and I'm gonna be really candid when I say this though, I don't feel like, outside of law enforcement, I don't feel like I should stop for any white person with a gun or any white person that tells me to stop.
I think we all will feel that way, especially growing up in the North, because that's just not a norm here. You know, we can have gun permits and have a weapon, but there's no right to carry in New York City, in New York, period. So that's something foreign to us. You know, just seeing people walking around with shotguns. I'm seeing this on CNN and it's just like crazy because that is not our normal here. It's really out of sight, out of mind for us. But when we decided to do this collaborative effort, we put out a call to on our social channels, to on Instagram, Facebook, etc. And this is going to be a new type of format for us. We're going to have some voice notes that we'll listen to. We're going to have one-on-one interviews with runners, and we're also going to have a roundtable discussion with other podcast hosts, which we'll introduce to you all later on. So first we will get into user submitted voice notes. So first up, I'm going to play a voice note from Les Runs. He is a New York City based runner, and he just wanted to send in his thoughts and feelings on what it's like running while Black. So I am going to go ahead and cue that up.
Hello everyone, my name is Les, I'm a Black male, and these are my views and only my views of running while Black. I currently reside in New York City, and running while black is interesting. It's fun. It's awesome. It's also dangerous. It's also scary. It's also just a burst of energy. There are many, many feelings that occur when you're a black man running in the streets of New York City. When it comes to me running in an urban neighborhood that I'm familiar with, a culturally diverse neighborhood in any borough, I feel great. You know, I get smiles, I get waves, I'm locked in, I don't have to really look over my shoulder too much. I mean, this is New York City, so once in a while, or, you know, you might get a couple crazy hecklers, which I tend to ignore because, you know, it's not going to end well, or it's just not, that energy is not just good, it's not good for a run at all, so I don't even entertain hecklers or catcallers or whatever you want to call them. It's just negative energy, and that's not the energy I look for when I go on a run, because most of the time, you know, I'm either training for something, or I'm trying to meditate, or I'm thinking, I'm like in deep thought. So, but yeah, running, you know, as a black male in New York City in culturally diverse urban neighborhoods, or even suburban neighborhoods that are culturally diverse, I feel safe, I feel good. But when it comes to running in predominantly white neighborhoods in New York City, I tend to look over my shoulder a lot. I get all types of glares at times. I mean, this is clearly not on every single run, but there are days where, like, I just keep running. I don't stop because, you know, if you stop, then you end up engaging in, like, a verbal discussion or a verbal conversation. And then it could either go two ways, you know. It could be a mutual understanding, or it could be a way where authorities are involved, or it could get physical. So I tend not to engage in any of that when I'm running in predominantly white neighborhoods. I do think about, you know, just minding my business and making sure that I'm safe. So, you know, I tend to clearly look over my shoulder, and I tend to just be more observant of the road, of whether I'm on the sidewalk or if I'm on the street, because it could, you know, it could go any way. And these are just things that happen when you're running while black in New York City and predominantly white neighborhoods, whether I'm in an urban neighborhood or a suburban neighborhood that's predominantly white. This is just how I feel. But, you know, I'm working towards trying to understand and help change that narrative, because no matter what happens, I'm still running in these streets. I'm still going to run in urban neighborhoods. I'm still going to run in suburban neighborhoods. And I just, you know, I'm training for life.
That is a good one, training for life. So what was your take? Did you have that feeling as well, like running the streets of New York City?
Absolutely. So, you know, what stood out to me was when he said, when he's in culturally diverse neighborhoods, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, that's telling, because with myself, you know, I was born in Brooklyn, Kings County Hospital. And, you know, whether it was Brooklyn or whether it was the Bronx, which was predominantly Hispanic and Black. So, you know, I just grew up around just people that were minorities, rather. And, you know, I've never felt safe, I've never felt unsafe operating in those circles, whether I was, you know, just going to the store or running. Well, when I took up running, you know, it was very encouraging. But, you know, again, like when I started running upstates and the trails, and, you know, there was always kind of just this feeling of like, okay, I need to be cautious now, right? When I step outside mm-hmm. of my community. And it's something that I'm pretty sure a lot of, you know, Black people can identify with. This isn't on running, but this was something that if you guys can look this up and what you'll hear today. And for me, Now This, which is a Democratic video site, there was a truck driver delivering, he was delivering goods to a gated community. And when he delivered it, he received the door the inside the gated community, there's a key code. So he received it from the person he needed to deliver it to. Mm-hmm. So he was prevented from leaving because the president of the neighborhood watch committee wouldn't allow him to leave. Now, I say that to say this. Again, because he's a person of color, he was stopped. And this happens constantly, whether it's, you know, a delivery or whether you're going to see a friend or running. And, you know, the reality of the situation is when we speak of our white counterparts, you know, they operate and they move freely through the world with no question whatsoever. And it's just almost like, okay, our pigmentation is a preconceived notion of trouble, you know, and, you know, we just have to watch our tone, or we have to, you know, not be in a space too long. You look at Starbucks and what happened to the young men waiting for their tutors, that happened mm-hmm. last year. So, you know, again, I identify with that so much with Carlos, and even making a move to Canada here, even though the climate isn't, I feel like they really aren't, and I'm thankful for this, they aren't as culturally divided as they are in the States, but I do have a raised level of awareness.
Yeah. And I run with Les. We're both in the Adidas runners community. He's a crew runner. And we run through a lot of culturally diverse neighborhoods. But you know how New York City goes. You can run for 20 blocks and it'll be predominantly white. You get up into the, you know, the 110s, 120s, the neighborhood starts to change. So, you know, it's interesting running in New York City because we are more free and open when we're in communities of our own. But when those neighborhoods change, you know, we move a little bit differently. And, you know, we're just a little cautious and more aware of our surroundings, because running while Black is just different. And we have to acclimate to our surroundings and move accordingly.
Absolutely. I agree 100%.
So we have another voice note from a Georgia-based runner, GK Smith. He is really active in the Atlanta running community. That's how I met him. But he lives in Decatur, Georgia, which is about 7 miles, I believe, outside of Atlanta. So it's pretty close. So he has actually a pretty interesting story to tell. So I am just going to play his audio.
One morning while running, a pickup truck with 3 occupants attempted to run me off the road. When I reported it to the police department, I was asked by the officer, did I remember the plate? My response to the officer was I was fleeing for my life and therefore did not look at the license plate. Since that day, I run armed.
Now, GK is in Georgia, the same state where the Ahmaud Arbery tragedy has happened. And he was out for a normal run and he was run off the road by a pickup truck. I don't know who is paying attention to license plates when they're running and someone is trying to, you know, kill them, trying to run them off the road. So, you know, when he told me that story, I was shocked, because when you think of that part of Georgia, you don't think those type of things would happen. And for him to now have to run armed, carrying a weapon is eye-opening for me. I mean, my parents moved to Georgia about 4 years ago, and the first thing that they did was get licensed to carry, which blew my mind, because my mother, you know, she's like a 60-something woman, and she grew up in New York City her entire life. She's never owned a weapon, ever, but she moved to Georgia, and the first thing she did was become a registered gun owner, and she has a license to carry, which is crazy to me, but...
Now, isn't that something, though, just add into that, right? Because you know, I grew up in the South Bronx, right? So Washington Projects are pretty much a large part of my life. You know, have family members that were in gangs, and have friends that were in gangs. Never, ever, ever have I ever felt the need to get a gun, right? You know, again, because I wasn't involved in that type of life, but however, you know, that environment, to most, they would say, oh man, it's dangerous, and you know, you see the news stories of Southside Chicago and things like that. But what does it say when you leave New York, right, or a place where they deem it high crime, and you go buy a gun for essentially, I'm just gonna say it, for white people, right? Because
and she lives in the suburbs. It's not like she's in the hood.
Exactly, right?
So you know, it's she's like, in the suburbs.
You're because now, but the process as I'm processing this, it's as if you. I'm thinking about Trayvon Martin. I think about Ahmaud Arbery, and I say, okay, well now I need a weapon to defend myself. Because what happens if I'm out for a run by myself and I'm not armed? And then, you know, and while I'm dead, everyone's debating whether it's my fault or not, right? And it's just, yeah, that's just something that just stood out to me, you know, as I listened to that audio and you commented and added to that is, hey, look, you know, you live in a community your whole time with people that look like you, and there is violence, and that's true. But all right, now I'm going to move to the suburbs where there are white people, and they're just afraid of us. Now, I don't think we're not afraid of them, because I'm not afraid of any, you know, Caucasian or anybody for that matter. However, but it's coming from a mind frame of, okay, I need to protect myself.
And exactly.
That's sad. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we are going to bring in our first guest of the show. His name is Carlos Patterson. He is a New York City-based runner. And I will let Carlos tell you a little bit about himself when he comes on. So let's bring on Carlos. Please welcome Carlos Patterson to the show. Like I said, Carlos is a New York City area based runner.
Yes.
And I will let you tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
Grew up a competitive swimmer, which moved me into triathlons. Did about 8 triathlons, took some time off, business, kids. You guys know how it is. So I took like 10 years off and wanted to jump back into the triathlons and work on my second strongest, which was running. And kind of got tied up with the running and trying to accomplish my, the majors. So I'm 4 out of 6 and was on schedule to finish the last 2 this year, Tokyo and Boston. And Tokyo got canceled and Boston is postponed until September 14th. And we know, you know, that's kind of up in the air. So, yeah, that's a little bit about myself. And I'm also a life coach.
That's awesome. So when the whole Ahmaud Arbery tragedy happened, how did that affect you and your family, and how did that make you feel and affect how you're moving now with your running?
My family's reaction affected me a lot. As soon as it happened, sadly, I had the video sent to me by my son that's 13 years old. So prior to this, his introduction into the real world was when Trayvon Martin was killed. And I had to have that talk that a Black father has with his son, that even though you're in the right, how you have to take it easy, at least till I get there. And what's a tough introduction, because I believe in allowing kids to be kids for as long as it can be. But when he sent me this video of Ahmaud Arbery, it really hit close to home, because it's not that the brother was just, you know, he was just a runner, but it reminded me that this is a Black thing that's becoming more and more prevalent and easy to swallow for America, because, you know, the political climate that we're in right now that is allowing these racial undertones that have built this country to now pull themselves to the forefront and be comfortable in the way they move and the way they react. And that was very, very hurtful. I think what hurt me even more is that this happened 2 months ago. Mm-hmm. And these guys haven't even left the country or tried to flee. The boldness of just hanging out. Yeah. They just having mm-hmm. breakfast and dinner and, you know, it's on with life. And I'm like, you know, at some point, just studying history, you know, as a people, when you feel like the system that you believe in, that you're trying to give some hope, some altitude to, it's not working for you, then what happens? I mean, we all know what happens. And I think us as a people, because I'm Black all the time, I'm a runner sometime. You know, mm-hmm. So
yes.
So
exactly.
You know, I think, you know, this is, as I've been saying, is a human rights issue. You know, this is not a civil rights issue. This is a human rights issue. When you feel you can take a life, and that's it. You know, I see people up in arms when something happens to a dog. I live in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. So there are quite a few dogs around here.
More than quite a few.
I'm always having to educate individuals that, you know, they have their dog leash halfway across the sidewalk. And we trying to share the sidewalk and, you know, have to educate them on, do I supposed to stop while you and your dog figure out, you know, the sidewalk situation? And, you know, just common courtesy. So, you know, to me, certain things as a human issue, we're trying to, you know, share this earth. And if this is how we're reacting, I want to leave this world a little better for my kids. And what am I, you know, so how do I explain this? You know, how do we as people in this day and time, 2020, how do we as people, you know, explain this? I just did 15.5 miles today. With the group of individuals, and you know, we did our social distancing and things like that. But I must tell you, when I do run, my family's reaction was like, make sure you're with somebody. So those early runs, those late runs that I normally do, because I'm putting in mileage, and just, you know, running is me zoning out. That's my free space right there. That's the even though I have to deal with racism and this and the struggles of having a business and all these other things, I don't have to deal with it at that moment. And now to hear that this happened, you know, all this extra pressure to ensure my family that I'm gonna be okay each time I leave this house to go work out and stay healthy, is very alarming. And, you know, to see my son a little unnerved by me going out, and you know, they're already uncomfortable when I leave the country and do these races and stuff like that, and mm-hmm. I've always traveled, but now for this to happen at home, where do we go from here?
And I have a 13-year-old son as well, and I, you know, he doesn't understand when I tell him that you can't be going out, because he walks to school. We live about a half a mile from his school, so he walks to school, and during the winter it's dark when he leaves the house, mm-hmm. and he wears a hoodie. That's all kids wear these days, man. Are hoodies. Like, they live and die by the hoodie. I don't get it, but he doesn't understand. Like, I explained the whole Trayvon Martin situation to him, you know, why you need to be more aware of your surroundings, and, you know, put a hat on. You don't have to wear your hood to walk to school. And mm-hmm. just sometimes it's hard to explain to these teenagers, you know, it's not exactly the wrong thing to do, but you just need to move differently to keep yourself safe. And I found it hard as well to show. I haven't shown him that video yet, and luckily he hasn't come across it on, he's not big on the internet, so he hasn't mm-hmm. come across it yet. But, you know, he comes in and he watches the news with me. I'm on CNN every night watching Cuomo and Lemon, mm-hmm. you know, talk about this situation. And he asked me, you know, why was this kid shot? What did he do to deserve this? And, yeah. you know, as a parent, I just find it hard to explain to him
absolutely
the situation, because being in New York, I mean, we deal with this, but we don't deal with it like that.
No.
You know, so,
you know,
I mean, Jay, what do you think?
Yeah.
Carl, yeah, I mean, you know, again, like it's us operating in a bubble and preparing, you know, the next generation, right? As both of you guys mentioned, your children, of how to dress, watch your tone, you know, watch where you're going, make sure you have someone with you. It's, we are, you know, as Black men and women, you know, we operate in a bubble and in defense mode. And it's something, quite honestly, that our white counterparts don't have to deal with. No. They don't think about that, right? They don't think about how their kids, you know, when you go to school today, you know, make sure you don't have your hoodie on, you know, make sure you don't have the wrong the colors, or you're in the wrong neighborhood and things like that. And Carlos, the question I wanted to ask you as well too, because, you know, these were text messages that I got once Ahmaud got killed. You know, what are your thoughts when, you know, I got text messages saying, BJ, be careful, you know, just make sure you're safe and call me when you get back. Yes. And, you know, you get these messages and stuff like that. And what are your thoughts when we have to move through society like this?
It's upsetting. You know, I'm 41 years old, and I grew up in Brooklyn. I was born in North Carolina, and I spent many summers in North Carolina. So when you grow up in 80s, 90s Brooklyn, and you make it through that, in Flatbush and Bed-Stuy, where it was a lot of gangs and so on and so forth, and, you know, you lived at a time where, you know, you do what you have to do to make sure you get through life, and to see that this is here, that this is present, to worry about me at 41 years old, you know, running, staying healthy. I mean, this is like, at some point in your life, you know, I went away to college and it was sad, but even, you know, going away to college, just leaving Brooklyn, making it out of Brooklyn, I felt I was successful. I went to 6 funerals my senior and junior year, between those two, of friends that I knew. And just making it away to college, I felt just successful to just make it out. Now that this is happening here, and like I said, I was born in North Carolina, where you know, you make two rights and a left, and you see Dixie flags everywhere. It's Klan's meetings. And there was, you know, at times words being exchanged. You know, and it's one thing that, you know, I must say I appreciate about the South, is, you know, you're not inviting me to dinner and I'm not inviting you to dinner. So there's there's an understanding of expression, of freedom of speech and point of view. Where here in New York, in the North, you can work with these people every day and you really don't know their point of view on things until my son try to marry your daughter. Or,
hello.
Or something like this happened. And we see a blanket of silence, where if something was happening to a pet, we would hear an outcry of support. But, you know, this is becoming all too often. You know, I'm losing hope in the politicians. I'm very involved in communities. I hit town hall meetings. You know, I have a very lengthy real estate investor background. So I'm very active in the community. And trying to educate people of color, you know, that work so hard to get these mortgages and these homes, how to keep their homes and how to keep what they built here. So, you know, just to see this happening, disheartening. It makes me angry. And a lot of the frustration is because the loss of hope in the system that, you know, don't support you. But you're always hopeful that we're getting better. You know, that's the thing. You feel like we went so far. I felt like we went so far back with this. And it's just constantly, constantly happening with no convictions. They're absolutely, I don't know. I mean, even before Trayvon, there has not been one conviction. And there are at least in United States on large, at least 7 to 10 of these murders happening, you know, back
that we don't know about because they don't make national news.
Yes, absolutely. This one was about to get swept under the rug. So, you know, it's just, you know, at some point, you know, where do we go? I can't worry about what they're gonna do, but us as Black people, what do we do? Mm-hmm. You know, and I've been looking for an optimistic, passive approach because I am a parent. But at this point, if something ain't drastic, then I'm gonna be parents to who? You know, it's like, what have I done for my kids?
Mm-hmm. And you know what? To bring up, you brought up the how people, white people, get outraged when things happen against animals. Yeah. You know, when I was talking to my coworker, our weekly check-in, my white older coworker,
yes,
and you know, she asked me how did I feel about the Ahmaud Arbery situation, and I don't like to get into these discussions with them because it's not going to end well. Yeah. And you know, the first thing she brought up was, well, Michael Vick did this. I'm like, what does that have to do with this? What does it have to do with this? These two men shot and murdered a young Black male that was out for a jog. What does Michael Vick having animals fight have to do with this man losing his life? And, you know, that's where I just have to end the conversation, because sometimes there's just no point in going back and forth with certain people because they just don't get it. They don't get what it's like to be Black in America.
May I add to that briefly, Kim? Mm-hmm. And you run tours in Paris, and the owner had a blackface, right? His mother, it was Happy Mother's Day, and he had a blackface.
Whoa, yeah.
And in terms of the context, I learned about this photo online. So when I saw the photo, I said, okay, you know what? We need to raise awareness, because us as Black people, we are so supportive of everyone else that, you yes. know, it's mm-hmm. your decision is whether you want to support it or not, but I need to raise awareness to this. So mm-hmm. I posted it. And speaking to Kim's point on Facebook, because a little bit of the drama did play out on Instagram, because the director or the owner reached out, but there was a conversation on Facebook and the guy brought up two photos of
I saw that.
Right? And he's like,
from white girls, and yeah, who's the other one?
And a Dave Chappelle skit when he did the white faces.
Yeah, I saw that.
And mm-hmm. how is that, you know, first off, how is that relevant? You're making a point from two fictional characters, and the point I made to him was, no one said that that was okay. However, like, that's not a comparison to a blackface, which has been going on since the early 1900s,
absolutely.
Right? And prior to that, and like what just Kim said, you know, I see it, I'll probably make one comment to the most to kind of drive the point home, and I'll move on, right? Because this is another reason why I'm glad we participated in this and had this collectively, is because when we have discussions outside of Black people, you know, our community, they don't get it a lot of times, right? They don't understand. They don't get why a lot of these things are offensive to us, and they don't get why we have to move the way that we move through life. And then when you've seen it happen to Trayvon Martin, and you see it happening to Ahmaud Arbery now, these guys are on trial in their death, right? It's like new videos coming out. Well, what was he doing in the house? It doesn't matter. Like, nothing was taken. It doesn't matter. And what bothers me the most, and as I talk to, you know, running groups, and Black running groups particularly, is and Carlos, you didn't hear this when I had the conversation, I'm not sure, with Kim, was I just saw a young Black male alone by himself. Mm-hmm. Because if it was two or three Black men with him, it would have been different.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And totally different.
You know, we're at a place right now to where, like I said, you know, we're at a crossroads, and it just so happened that, you know, I've said through this quarantine time that we're in with this whole COVID, you know, thing that we're dealing with, it's going to bring a lot of things in the dark to the light, both within ourselves, and I'm having a lot of economic discussions with other business leaders. And I actually even jumped on a Harvard conference call, and economists and everyone is just saying, you know, America just need to basically economically repent and go through this recession and deal with the hardships so that we can be in a better place. But in mm-hmm. saying that, it just feels like, you know, everything is coming to the light. And issues that we've been sweeping under the rug for far too long you know, I tell people straight up, you know, I have white counterparts, white friends, and it's that I don't believe, you know, I treat a child like a child, an adult like an adult. So I don't believe you don't get it, because you do get it if you needed to switch places with me, because you would say no.
Exactly.
So that lets me know you get it. You get it, but you want to stay in your world. And that's mm-hmm. every human being. You know, I life coach, and we always want to do what's comfortable. You know, when people ask me, they'll ask how you did something, and it's, you know, that they thought was amazing, or, you know, anyone else. It's a mindset, but you put yourself in a position to where people naturally don't want to be uncomfortable. That's just a natural human quality. And when they felt that they're uncomfortable, for example, these individuals that are, you know, they have guns that I don't even know why any citizen should have, because what are you going to hunt?
Like assault rifles.
Assault rifles.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that too, again, you got the NRA, which is linked to white supremacy. How do we know? Because we can have mass shootings, and Canada can change laws, but we refuse to change laws because the lobbyists from the NRA and all these other federations will not alter that amendment in no form or fashion. It's putting a lot of these senators and congressmen kids through college. It's paying for that second home, that vacation home, and they're not budging on this subject. It doesn't matter how many mass shootings, but there's no reason why you have individuals comparing them being quarantined for their safety. And for those individuals that are putting their life on the line, they're able to, with hatred, you got a freedom of speech, why I got to be hatred? Again, say, why you got to have an assault rifle? I just saw an individual with a weapon that was not supposed to be bearing arms. I believe it was in Michigan somewhere. And that was the nicest apprehension of any cops with a person with a gun. He had a gun, and he didn't know that in this state, I guess he must have came there for the rally, that he was not supposed to be showing his weapon. So they were putting...
He was open carrying.
Open carrying, and they took the longest to arrest this guy. Asking him questions. They basically laid him on the ground with a pillow. I've never seen anything like this. And then I see...
Was it a white man?
Oh, come on. Do you have to ask me that? Are you serious?
To make sure.
I mean, but on the flip side, I receive a video of a child being punched in the face and arrested because they're not wearing a mask. In New York, I've seen 4 to 5 videos of young black men and one black woman being beat for not wearing a mask.
Did you see the one in the train station?
Oh, yeah.
With her daughter?
Yes.
With her daughter.
I just recently saw that.
They took her down in front of her daughter. I could not believe it.
And see, this is the thing with people. This is America reminding black people that we have no emotional connection to your story. Because mm-hmm. you see it on the media. You see something happen to a child, and the media will immediately go to that black mom and ask her, what are your feelings? As if she is disconnected from this experience. When you see this in another light, whether it's a white person or any other person, you don't even see anything of that nature. So the emotional connection that America has with black people, there's been a disconnection for far too long. You know, to them, it's just like, this is something that happens all the time. So we must take it upon ourselves and be responsible and be the change we want to see. If we want to see a change, a shift, then we need to make a shift. Mm-hmm. And we need to make the shift where people pay attention, and that's in their pockets.
And with that, I want to thank Carlos for being on the show.
Thank you, guys.
And I love your background. Be the change you wish to see in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
That is what is that? That is awesome.
Canvas that I have on my wall that I had made for me. That
is amazing.
When I wake up, it just gets me started.
There's so many good quotes, just good words on there. Hope, failure.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I just want to thank you for being on the show. You're always a wealth of information
and knowledge.
You're just, you know, such a positive person and, you know, always good to be around. So thank you so much for lending your voice to
the show.
Carlos,
we just connected as well on Instagram. Let's not let this conversation end here.
Absolutely.
On this podcast episode. You know, we need to unify and be together. So if there's anything I could ever do for you in terms of sharing our platform and we come up with something collectively as a group for us, solution and things like that, you know, I'm certainly here and Kim certainly here for you.
Okay. Sounds like a plan. And I'm here.
And Carlos, just leave your Instagram so everyone can follow you on there.
Sure. It is Carlos Patterson, 718. You can find me. Follow me. Like I said, a life coach, and I'm here to help where it's needed. That's it. Let's put some mouths together.
Yes. All right, Carlos. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Have a blessed day.
Okay. You too.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, guys. So next up, we have James Ravenel and Devon Cully of Black Runners Connection. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Thanks for being on. How are you guys?
Doing all right. What's up?
Yeah, doing okay.
Good.
I reached out to you guys because, you know, again, as Black Runners and you guys have started your Black Running group, you know, there's a climate right now in the wake of the Ahmaud Arbery killing, as I describe it. And, you know, we just wanted to create a space and a forum for Black runners, just getting their thoughts collectively. So what I wanted to start with, first of all, is, you know, when you first heard, whether you seen the video or you heard about it, what were your initial feelings?
Well, I know I first heard about, I don't remember the timeline because it all blends after a while, but I had heard about the killing before the video came out. When I heard about a kid being shot running, there's just like a certain radar that goes off immediately. So when you hear that Black man was shot by a couple of white guys, it automatically sounds suspicious, at least for me and for a lot of Black people, it sounds suspicious from the jump. As details come out, and, you know, you start to hear what happened, it just sounds like, okay, here we go again. You know, we have another one. And then I know for me personally, I had read the part where they said that there was video that showed that he was trespassing or trying to stealing. I think the first time I heard about it said there was video of him stealing or something like that. And I remember my first thought was, okay, well, if that's true, where's the video? You know, because, you know, they do what they normally do in these situations. They go back in a person's history and these previous incidents to describe what the person, you know, to try to slander the person. So they did all that. So I was just wondering where was the video. So then when this video came out of him running and then you see what happened when he was actually murdered, you go through all the emotions. You're angry, you're sad, you know, as a parent, you always think about, you know, what the parents must be going through losing their kids. You know, as a runner, like we're discussing here, as a Black runner, you know, that's probably in a lot of ways our worst nightmare of something like that happening to us. And, you know, that's something most of us think about in the back of our minds, that it's a possibility. So it just, he definitely covered all of the range of emotions. And it's just very upsetting. And it still is. It's not one of those things that you just kind of get over, you know, it kind of lingers with you.
What about you, James?
I heard about the murder. I was reading an article from Blavity. I was reading the article and I was just astounded. And I shared the link to my Facebook page with a caption, "Why is this man dead?" Because it feels surreal that someone who is clearly out not carrying anything that they allege was stolen, doing the thing that millions of people do every day, every single day, escape or a mental release from, you know, the day-to-day, the stresses of the day. He can't even do that. You know, I think about how many songs, rap songs especially, talking about seeing 25 and feeling like you made it here this young man is 25 and a couple of months before he could even get out of that age, he is gunned down doing something that is just a routine thing. And not just gunned down. I mean, he was hunted, cornered, and gunned down, fighting for his life and gunned down. This has hit home in a way that has never affected me in the past. And one of the things that always gets me is when you hear the dialogue start, unarmed black man, you already know what's coming behind that. You already know the tragedy that comes along with that. It's hard. I just came in from a run. It's hard keeping it together, thinking about him, thinking about what he faced in broad daylight, no less. We got to understand that this happened at around 1 p.m. This is broad daylight. The audacity of the people who murdered him to just not care, you know, in broad daylight. Like he mattered so little to them that they would just take his life that way and feel justified in doing so. And clearly, that local government there, because of their inaction, is complicit, because they made no actions to even arrest these men. No charges were brought. And if, like Devon said, if you have video, I mean, once I saw the video, I didn't see it until after like the second interview that I had about this case. And I just could not believe it.
Exactly. Devon, I want to ask you a question as well regarding this issue is, you know, we as black people, men and women, you know, we move through the world in a bubble. And what I mean by that, and then defense mode is, you know, I moved from New York to Canada, right? And like, if I'm cold, should I put my hoodie on? Right? Or what neighborhood should I go through? And these are things that just go through my mind, my tone, right? Even whether it's an encounter with a Caucasian citizen, right? Or law enforcement. When this happened, what were your feelings? Or do you change your way of life or the way that you do things? Or did you have a certain level of awareness now because of this?
Me personally, not really, because I think my awareness is the same. Because I think in a lot of ways, this just confirms what I already know and confirms my experience, you know. I know I would assume, and it's an assumption for me because I lived in Canada, so I could assume that maybe some of your day-to-day experiences might be a little different because Canada is a different country. But, you know, I'm 47. I've lived my entire life here in the United States, most of it in New York City. I went to college in North Carolina for a little while, but I've been here my entire life. And, you know, the experiences of being black, the stories I tell aren't that much different from the stories my mother tells. Or, you know, if you listen to my aunts, the stories they tell. And if you go back, a lot of our stories are similar. The times may change, but just the attitudes towards us and the way people look at us and the way people think about us, it's kind of the same and it hasn't really changed. So, you know, to me, you kind of have to make a decision on who you are and how you're going to live your life. I try to be myself and be as comfortable with myself as I can. So if I feel like wearing a hoodie when I go outside, I will. If I feel like putting it on, I'll put it on. That doesn't mean I'm not aware. I'm always aware of when I'm in a space of people who don't look like me. And I'm always aware of the possibility of how I might be, what their perceptions of me may be. Sometimes it's positive, sometimes it's not. A lot of it I have no control over. So I think for me, that's why I try not to worry about it too much, because then if you start to worry about all the things that could possibly happen, I think sometimes that can really stifle you and prevent you from living your life. But by the same token, you have to be very, very careful. Like, I give you an example. Like for me now, with everything going on with this coronavirus, I only run at night now, because over here by me, I live in Long Island City. There's just a lot of people out, especially during the day. And I'm not comfortable running with a bunch of people out like that. So I generally run now at night. So I'll run at 10, I'll run at 11. Sometimes I've gone out after midnight, and I'll go get my miles in then where the streets are pretty empty. So I don't have to worry about encountering people. But however, I would be totally lying if I said, okay, I have to think about, all it takes is one person to see me as a Black person with, you know, my buff on, covering up part of my face. Some people may consider that a threat, and they may think I'm up to no good. And, you know, all it takes is one person and one phone call to the police, and the situation can go left immediately, with, not because of anything I've done. All I'm doing is just going out running. I know that is a possibility. And I think for most of us as minorities, we know that's a possibility. And that's the scary part, is that it's really not in our control. It's somebody else's issues and somebody else's perceptions, but it's still something we have to deal with. So I try to stay, for the most part, in areas that I feel I'm familiar with and that I'm comfortable with. That still doesn't mean that something can't go left and something might not go wrong, but I'm just of the mindset that I'm going to try to do the things I want to do. I'm going to try to do them safely, because, you know, I don't want my girlfriend to worry. I don't want my sister to worry. I don't want them to panic. But for me, I'm just not going to live in fear. But you still have to be smart. Like, you know, even all these years later, I'm not going for a run in like Howard Beach or someplace. That's still just not going. No matter what, I'm not going to do that. But, you know, you just have to try to do the best you can. But awareness of my Blackness is always there, no matter where I'm at. It's always there, and I think it always has to be there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you two are founders of one of the largest active Black running groups on Facebook, Black Runners Connection. So what is the vibe in your group? Because I know last week we all did a run on Ahmaud's birthday. We ran 2.23 miles. And, you know, I feel every time I go out for a run, once I hit 2.23, I take a picture of my watch. It's like on my mind every time I run since this happened. So what's the climate in your group like right now?
I think a lot of people are definitely similar to you, Kim. I think a lot of people are definitely, they've been affected by it, and they're definitely aware of it. There's definitely been a lot of chatter. There's a lot of consistent chatter about him and about the case. You know, we try to sometimes limit conversations that's just not specifically about running, you know, because things can go left in social media real quick. So we try to limit that. But I think this case, I think we've allowed people to talk about a lot of things with this case, because as Black people and as runners, it's hit a nerve. And I think a lot of times people need a space to be able to talk about it and work through some of their feelings. And, you know, with social media, we all have friends of different genders and different races and different beliefs. And sometimes you may not necessarily be comfortable expressing certain things about how you feel on your page, because you may not necessarily want to offend or upset or invite other people to comment. And some of those comments may not be exactly what you want to hear. So I think we try to allow people the space to work through some things. Again, I will say that. I will also say, it doesn't mean you can just come in and say anything. You know, we're not just going to let people come in and just, you know, just start ranting and start going in hate speech and all that other stuff. We're not going to do that. But I think we have to allow people, or we feel like we want to give people and the members of our group a space to discuss it. And part of that conversation is running and part of it's not running, but just like we're having here, it delves into other things about running at night and running with masks and running with people who don't look like you. And a lot of people are sharing stories that they've had where people of other races have encounters they've had, negative encounters that they had. So I think it's important for us to be able to discuss this stuff and get it out so people know that they're not alone in some of their thoughts and feelings and experiences, and we can all kind of speak to each other about how to deal with it and how to progress going forward in this after the effects of what's happened to this man.
So we had G.K. Smith. Do you guys know who G.K. is? Yes. So, I had a conversation with him and he sent us over some audio and he told us how he was actually run off of the road in Georgia while out for a run in Decatur and how now he runs with, you know, he runs armed. So, I know the climate is different. We're in the north, they're, down south, but do you guys have any suggestions for, Black runners to be safe while running and anything that they can do no matter where they are just to, you know, protect themselves while out on a run?
Well, you know, each area, right, of the country, you're going to have different types of potential threats. I don't know if there's one answer for that. But what I can say is on a baseline, I think it's important that you are always aware of your surroundings. You're out, which also means being aware of your own Blackness. Because unfortunately, through no fault of our own, our Blackness is looked at as a weapon to other people. It is looked at as a threat to other people, people that we have done nothing to, right? And so being aware of that, being aware of your surroundings, being just generally self-aware, and, you know, putting yourself in a position where you can go out and successfully get back home. And so what does that mean, right? If you are a runner in a city where there are a lot of other runners, maybe you need to stick to those routes. Maybe you need to change the times that you're running. Maybe you need to have some type of buddy system so that, you know, you're not alone, but you're also able to socially distance yourself from other people. In New York, you know, there's no opportunity for us to run armed. It doesn't mean that we don't feel the same type of threat from people, you know. I guess it's a little different in New York. If someone's trying to run you off the road, it's not always because of your Blackness. It's just, you know, a lot of people, they got somewhere to go, you know. But, you know, honestly, sometimes I have to laugh about this stuff to keep from crying about this stuff. Because we have to make so many decisions just to go for a freaking run. Like, I wear bright colors. Y'all know me. You've seen me in any, yeah, right? I always have bright color tights, bright shirt, I play the role of a runner when I'm out running so that people know that I'm just a runner out running. So.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You brought up something that I actually wanted to ask you when you said the buddy system, right? Because the first thing that stood out to me was when I saw the video was this is a young Black man alone, right? And I honestly feel that if he had another Black man, two or three Black men with him, that scenario would have changed differently. So as it applies to Black Runners Connection, your running group, is a buddy system something that you guys are thinking about implementing?
Well, I think it would be rather difficult to do that. And, you know, earlier today, just before we came on, I posted a welcome message to the influx of runners that we're getting from South Africa. Okay, so we are an international group. We literally have runners all over the world. And it's beautiful, it's a blessing. But because of the type of group that we are, that also means that it's difficult for us to provide an environment where people are able to just simply buddy up. And right now we have about 70, close to 7,500 members. We've tried, there was a one time we created a hashtag BRC Buddy, right? To try to get people to match up, you know, in their own cities. I think if we had tools that we could make available, there are none that really exist on Facebook's platform right now. And that's primarily where our folks commune. If we could, you know, if maybe at some point, if we decide to have like an actual website, and then maybe we can come up with a tool that will allow people to, one, maintain their privacy, but also, you know, be able to match up with some other buddies. That could be an idea, but as of right now, it's kind of difficult to manage that. And I think if you talk to some of the other larger groups, unless you have and they've come up with a great idea, please share with us.
Maybe we need to come up with an app.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking. I've thought about that in the past. You know, I got to get my coding skills up a little bit before we go there. But definitely, I literally have thought about some system where we're able to match match runners, no matter where you are, no matter what city you're in, and say, hey, you know, I'm going for a run around this time. You know, is anyone else available?
You know, it's hard though, because I run a lot alone, because when you run with people, the social aspect comes into play and you're out there longer than you intended to be. So sometimes it's easier just to go at it alone, but you know, it's definitely beneficial to have a buddy just for safety if you can, but it is hard, you know?
It is. And I think something like a buddy system and the way that we're speaking of it is one of those things that, it's better to kind of have it available and not need it than right now where it seems like we kind of need it, but we don't have it, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one would be forced to use it, but if they needed a resource for that, to have a buddy, it would be nice to be able to provide that for folks. I don't really know right now what the answer is for that. But I just want to take a step back a second and say that in this particular case with Ahmad, I honestly do not believe that he would have been safer with a buddy. I think that it is more likely that violence would have escalated even sooner, because they would have looked at him as being part of a gang or a mob, just because of the way that we are viewed. And it's sad that it's bad enough that he's one person out there running and looks like a villain to these men. But can you imagine, you know, they talked about him stopping and looking at a construction site. Can you imagine if three or four, imagine BMR New York City going over there.
I was going to mention them too. It's funny you say them.
Yeah, right? Because they have a no man left behind when they do their group runs. You imagine all of them stopping to look at this house. The report is now, there's a gang of blacks looking at some house. I think they're robbing it. Let's just keep it real, you know? So I don't, right now, I don't know what we can do to de-vilify, if that's a word, our blackness to people who are not us. But I think, you know, I've been talking about, activism, and, you know, I've never been the type to speak out like this, but this is just too close to home. It's unfortunate that this is the thing that's, you know, making me kind of wake up. but something is going to change. I don't know what that is just yet, but I feel the calling to action and activism around us being vilified for no reason.
And thank you, Devon, and thank you, James, for coming on here and sharing this. You know, this is much needed. We wanted to create a space for us, right, to have this discussion because, you know, again, we have friends that are our white counterparts as well that we associate in our everyday lives. But, you know, we get it, right? And then having this discussion is very helpful. So before we get out of here, I want you guys to share your social, your Instagram or whatever you need so that if anyone's interested in joining your group, they can do so. And we'll start with you, James.
Okay, so if people want to, you know, connect with us, our Instagram is BLK Runners, BLKRUNNERS. Our Facebook group is Black Runners Connection. There's also a Facebook page, but that pretty much just directs you to Black Runners Connections group. I do want to make it very clear to anyone listening to this, anyone reading about us, that we are not a Black only group. We are a Black focused group. You know, I do believe that there should be a space and for us to, you know, discuss issues that are important to us. But that said, you know, our group is multicultural. We do have, you know, people who are in India. We have people, we have white people, we have Black people, we have Asian people. We literally have people all over the globe. Our group is for runners, but our focus and the things that we discuss are Black focused. So, you know, people in the sound of my voice, you're welcome to join us, but don't do so thinking that we're, you know, not going to, you know, delight in our Blackness in our group, because that is what we are here for.
That's great. James, Devon, thank you so much for coming on and being our guest today. We are really, really grateful for that. Kim, if you have anything to add to that?
No, I will see you guys hopefully when we're free.
Yeah, that's right.
We're out of quarantine. That's
right. We know that later, right?
Yeah.
Very much pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Be sure to tune in to next week's episode for part 2 of our discussion on Running While Black, which will feature a roundtable discussion with myself and Jay, Derek of Behind the Wheel Podcast, and Tasha of Black Girl SOS Podcast. I'd like to thank our audio contributors, Les and GK, and our featured guests, Carlos Patterson and Devon and James of Black Runners Connection. Let's keep this conversation going and continue to run with Maud. Rest in heaven, Ahmaud Arbery. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Be sure to subscribe to The Run Wave on your favorite podcast app and leave us a review of the show on Apple Podcasts. It would really help me out. If you are a runner that has a story to tell and you would like to be on the show, you can email hello@therunwave.com or send us a DM on Instagram to The Run Wave. See you next time. Yeah.